Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I guess I'll be your host tonight. We weren't planning for this, but that's okay. I welcome all of you to the National Association's Stop Child Abuse Now show. And tonight is a special guest show. We're going to invite a Cricket, who is also named Tammy Andrews, from Eastern Pennsylvania, who we know quite well and has been on the show before, to return to us as a returning NASCA family member. And we'll see what's up with her. We like to catch up with people who have been on the show in the past, and that's the case with Tammy. So let me tell you, we have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is we address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do this with only two goals. One, to educate the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, as I said before, I wasn't supposed to be the host tonight because it's Carol Levine's night on Friday nights, but I don't see her here. I don't know what happened, but that's okay. We have plenty of people here, and we have a nice, I'm sure Tammy's here, and we have a couple other people as well. So we have a panel. I'll have to just go down the list, though, and find out who everybody is before we get started, because I don't have names that come up. I have a phone number that comes up, but not the name. So let me go through this one at a time in the order that you guys called in. The first number is from 484 area code, and I'd like to ask who this is and where are you from.
This is Cricket.
Hi, Cricket. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Bill. How are you?
Oh, it's great. Just to have you here.
Cricket, thanks. It's good to be back.
Yeah. I think I said Cricket was from Eastern Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if I did, but that's, in fact, where she's calling in from. And we always love having you, Cricket. Let me hold on for a second, and I'll go through these. There's two more calls I got to review, and then we'll get started. The next one,
okay.
Cricket, is somebody, from the 631 area code. 631, can I ask who this is?
It is Lori from New York.
Lori? Oh, my God.
Yep. I didn't expect you on tonight either.
No, I'm not supposed to be. That's okay. Actually, I'm supposed to assist Carol, trailing Carol. We call it trailing. We always have two people assigned, by the way. For those of you who don't understand, we have assigned hosts and we have assigned trailers. So that means that we guarantee that there's three voices, including the guest, on every show. At least that's what we try to do. So Carol was designated as tonight's host. I was scheduled as the trailer, Cricket as the guest, Lori was on the show recently and called in tonight to be on the panel, and we still have one more panel person, so let me get to that. This person's from the 610 area code, and I'd like to find out who this is, if I could. 610?
That would be me. My name is Angie, and I am Tammy's oldest sister.
Oh, no kidding. That's great. So you're from Pennsylvania too, huh?
Correct.
Yeah, all right. Well, they're going to outnumber us here, Lori, but that's okay. Lori, by the way, is not from New York. She's from Long Island.
Well, I was born in New York, but that was it. Born and moved away.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of Long Island identity here for me, too, because my father's large family was from Rockville Center, which is Long Island. And he had 13 siblings, so there are a lot of Murrays running around that part of the county. All right. Now let's get started, though, with the show. As I said, the object of the show, actually, we didn't say the object. The object is to basically to inform people who are listening, especially new people, about the various things that we do as survivors and that we recommend that they consider doing, too. Among the most important thing to do, frankly, is to tell your story. And that's at least part of what Tammy Cricket will do tonight. Cricket's going to go through at least some of her story. And, you know, right now she's very comfortable telling her story, but there was a time when she was, you know, kind of very scared about telling her story. And this is very common. We pretty much all go through it. In fact, it's the most common thing that we do as a group in terms of our reaction is to our abuse. So we get abused, and one of the first things we do is we shut down, and we don't talk, and we keep the secret. And for a lot of reasons we do that, and we can talk about that too. But the point is telling your story for the first time is a big deal, and if you've not done it, we want you to know that you can come on here, and we will assist you. We hold the hand, if you want, of the new person who's telling their story for the first time. And we don't think that's a small thing. That's a big deal. So each of us have done this before. Tammy certainly has done it before, Cricket. And so let's get you started, Cricket. Do you you want to just jump in, or should I say a little more about who you are and where you come from? It's up to you.
Oh, I can jump in.
Sure.
I'm a survivor of alcoholic parents that were neglectful, survivor of the foster care system, and I'm a guardian angel, victims advocate, missing persons advocate. I'm now writing a book called, I Should Be Dead, A Survivor's Journey to Becoming the Voice of the Voiceless. Because for me, the journey is just as important as getting the story out of what you went through to help empower others to empower themselves.
Exactly. And that's another aspect of why it's important we eventually tell our story, because we say we're as sick as our secrets. But once we start telling our secrets, we actually find out that it empowers us with a gift that we wouldn't have unless we had been abused, which is the gift of attracting others to their own recovery and helping them break their cycle of silence. And that's a big deal. But our normal way of doing this can take decades to get to the point where you start to be a voice for the voiceless. That's okay. You are, of course, that now. We've had you on a couple of times as a guardian angel, for example, from Easton, Pennsylvania, and as a missing persons person, a lead advocate for CFSI, Center for Search and Investigations. And we're going to talk about both of those things. It's up to you what you want to talk about, Tammy. It's your show. But you know, it's, we can talk about all of that and your book and anything else. So it's up to you. I'll be quiet.
Actually, I live with my sister now.
That would be that me.
Yes, that would be her.
Hi, Angie.
She was actually the closest thing to a mother I ever had, and we're only 5 years apart.
Oh, okay. Well, that's wonderful.
So,
you met each other.
Yeah, we kind of found each other again more, and I'm learning more about my childhood that I didn't know before, which is good because I want to know it, but then working through those things. It's all part of the journey.
Now, Angie grew up with the same parents. Go ahead. I was going to ask you. You grew up with the same parents. How did you turn out?
Well, I first wanted to just backtrack once when Tammy was talking about her journey and speaking her story. I didn't speak my story forever, ever. I'm 59, and I think at 57 I finally started talking to a therapist. So, yes, you do keep everything in. And I told her everything, but it's a process, and I do feel a lot better. And I have to kind of thank Tammy for pushing me that it's okay. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
But,
I have a feeling Cricket's like the kind of person that you're pretty comfortable with and you will open up to. I think that,
yeah, we've always
I
been.
I think you get that in the Guardian Angels, too. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've always been pretty close, but then there'd be distance again. Then we'd be close and there'd be distance again. With my first husband, she lived with me for a short time, too. And now I'm remarried, and she's living with me now. But, I mean, I think we're closer now because I'm finally talking about things, too. And she did tell me her story. But every now and then, something more will come out, which is good, too. But she's right. It is a journey, and it's a process. It's nothing that you'll ever forget, but it does make it a little easier when you can talk about it to someone.
You know, and it's a progression. Because as I said, the first time you speak, you may have held it in for decades, like you did, Andy.
Oh,
I did. It's a lot of pressure to even be convinced by somebody who loves you and you love them that it's okay to talk. It's a lot of pressure because our impetus is to shut down. Go ahead.
Yeah. For our parents, both had the same parents, alcoholic parents, and I told her some more things that she didn't know because she was so little, but it was like a revolving door there. They had people in and out. Who knows what they were doing to us? I mean, there are things I don't remember, but they should not have had, like I would say to Tammy, we would always question why. Why are we here? Why did these people have all these kids? We're in foster care and they're still having kids. Come on.
One of the important things to do on a show like this is to, keep mentioning through the show, because we don't know who's listening, that there may be somebody here who's, needs to tell their story or needs help or needs direction. And that's what we're all about at NASCA and at this show. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is simply, it's thousands of people now. But it's one survivor of abuse talking to another. And we help us each other get through the trauma. And it's real trauma. It's very, very, it's very, very hard to get through by yourself. In fact, I don't think anybody does, really. People who have told me, some people have told me that they did it by themselves. And they're not the most comfortable people, frankly. That's a judgment.
Yeah.
I
don't believe.
All right,
I have three children.
Go ahead.
Well, you were just asking me how I turned out, and I didn't get to. I was just going to say I have three grown children, and I married an alcoholic. Their father's an alcoholic, but none of them. They're good kids. They can take care of themselves. They have jobs. They're they're great kids, master's degree, one's in the Army. All three of them are doing great, and I'm, like, so blessed and thankful because my house was dysfunctional, too. Not like our parents, but it was dysfunctional, too.
Sure.
Yeah, we stopped the cycle.
Yeah, that's how we feel. We feel, because we have another sister that gave her two kids up, and all I could think of was, you're just repeating the cycle. Why did you even have these kids? Why did you, you know, and I was devastated. But I have hit everything. People don't even know when I tell them my story that they don't even believe it. What? You were taken away? Because I'm good. I'm a good, I can hide it. Not really from Tanner anymore or my my second husband. He knows me inside and out. But it is hard because you don't want people to know you have any kind of scars, you know?
Right. And
yeah,
I
feel that
from the very beginning. Go ahead, Cricket.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I feel that the children that are going through the foster care system or even that have, you know, are in a bad family life regardless, we learn to disguise it.
Mm-hmm.
Better actors
mm-hmm.
than anybody. We just don't get paid mm-hmm. for it. But that's a survival skill.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Yeah. All right. Let's see how Laurie feels about this. She's been listening to the whole thing, and we're going to include Laurie, of course, as the show goes on. And anyone else, by the way, who wants to call in may do so. In fact, let me give out the number right now. It's 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And that happens to be a dedicated number to our show, so we use it every night, same number. But if there's anyone out there who would like to join us, feel free at any point in the show. But, Laurie, you're here, and we'd like to hear a little bit from you.
Well, the first thing that I hit on was about the secret and keeping it. 59, that's a long time. But I understand that I blew the whistle on everybody when my son was, like, little because I had a sister, not a good sister, living in his house. And my father was a pedophile who was telling me what he was going to do to her. So I blew the whistle on her. Yet his sister, which would be my aunt, asked me to keep the secret from her son because his father walked out and he looked up to my father. So I did keep the secret. He still doesn't know. So that was what I hit on first. I think it depends on who. And then, you know, with secrets, when you come out with something like that, you know, I had the family who kind of like stomped their feet and walked away. Oh, it's not true. You're crazy. The whole thing. You have a support system there, which is absolutely wonderful. I'm very impressed because I really didn't have a good sister. So, the second thing is presenting yourself. You're worried about a scar. A scar, it means that your wound has healed and is in still the process of going to be for your whole life because you can't get rid of every kind of memory. So a scar is something to be proud of, not embarrassed of. You know, you just be yourself. You'd be surprised how many people out there, you know, they don't say anything, but they relate, you know, to people with scars. You know, so.
It's not so much embarrassed, but I couldn't really talk about it without saying I wasn't wanted. That is the most horrible thing that when I was little, to realize.
Yeah, to be a throwaway.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So,
it comes out as that.
Yeah, and I couldn't talk about that without crying or getting angry, upset. I was a very angry child. I wanted to kill everybody.
Yeah, me too.
Just because I was an angry child. I'm not like that anymore. I mean, I still can get angry, but Tammy is the one that convinced me to talk about it to the therapist. That was at 57. Yeah, I'm 59 now. And it is, you know.
It's empowering. I can hear it in your voice. You feel empowered.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know you made that decision. And in just 2 years, I mean, from what you described the way you were until the person I'm hearing tonight, there is a difference, a definite positive difference.
It's taken a long time to feel that way. Like, for years, I'd tell my doctor different things, and he wanted me to talk to a therapist for years, and I just wouldn't do it. I didn't want to admit that I had any kind of, mental instability or anything, just nothing. I wouldn't take the medicine. I didn't want nothing to do with that stereotypical, you know. And now I advocate for it. I tell my friends that talk to me about it. You know what? It'll make it feel better. If it doesn't, then don't keep taking it. But
that's what it comes
feel
down
better.
To. That's what it comes down to. No, but you're doing wonderfully.
And it gets easier the more you talk.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
And those tears that come out of you, that's just more of the wound pouring out of you. It's a good thing. You're not holding it back. It's the people who think that they can keep it way hidden and think that it doesn't affect their life. They're wrong. They're wrong. So you're doing it all right. I'm glad that your sister talked you into this.
Oh, she knows how I am.
My writing coach, Sonova Cantrell, she told this little story, and I feel it is so true for so many of us. A big elephant that is tied with rope to a circus tent. They are the strongest animals in the world, yet they're not going to break free. Because the baby elephants are chained and they keep trying to escape and keep trying to get away to the point where they just give up. So as they get older, that rope is all that's needed to keep them trapped.
Makes sense.
And yeah, it's a psychological chains. And we keep breaking them. That's the only way that we're going to keep reaching the next step that we need to reach in our healing.
True again. And you keep going and going. Something else is going to come further in the future because you never stop growing. Once you started, speaking and now you're writing a book and whatnot, you're just going to keep growing and growing.
And it's not about how many times you fall down. It's about how many times you get up. I have fallen down too many times to count. But I'm still here.
My road name is Bounce Back for that very same reason. That's what it is about. It's good.
Well, this is a very interesting conversation, I'm sure, for people that are listening. Let me stress that there are a lot of ways to recover. We've talked about using a therapist and so forth. Of course, that's a good one, or a counselor. But there are also what we call life coaches out there. Anybody who understands treatment, or not treatment, trauma, and trauma-trained and trauma-informed can do it. And that can include survivors who don't have formal training but have been around a little while. I've been around a long time, nearly 40 years. I've been clean and sober all that time, too, because I, too, was an alcoholic. And in the mid-80s, I got sober. And it was in the process of doing that I found a way to get through my child abuse story, which was not a mystery to me, but it had been a secret. And the way I did it was I used the 12 steps, same 12 steps. But that's another path. Then there's ministry. You can do it through churches, and you can do it through people who do natural stuff like yoga and Reiki and, hypnosis, lots of things. There's animal therapy and art therapy. There's many, many things. There's EMDR. All of these are tools that you can possibly use, and we encourage you to investigate any of the tools that you want, and then make a decision about which one you're going to try first. That's it. We don't have a required way to recover at NASCA. We encourage people to select their own, and we'll tell them about you know, the different options that they have, of course. But it's really up to them. And by the way, if you are a survivor who, you know, tells their story to, let's say, a minister, and it doesn't go very well, you can just change to somebody else, a counselor or a coach. You know, you're not locked in other words, to whatever you're choosing. And that's another fear that some people have. If they get started, they don't think they can change. Well, you can. You can change from one counselor to another, too. You know, it's you're the boss. They work for you. And they are supposed to accommodate your needs. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, sometimes that's not easy either, because you finally got the courage to tell somebody. And
right.
that was hard. And then you're not comfortable all of a sudden and you have to go to somebody else. You may not do it.
Right.
I really lucked out
right.
with my I connected with her immediately, and I felt very comfortable. I mean, I still haven't told her everything, but I'm very comfortable with her. I can't imagine getting somebody else. You know, I think it would be harder to do it again, you know, because it took me forever to do it this time.
Yes, and her therapist used to be my therapist years ago, so I know that she's in good hands.
And that's the first thing she told me.
Good.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to love her. You'll be in good hands. And I do. I love her.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I think
that's because
she has a history on you now already. She knows a little about you.
Well,
I think that's a good thing.
That doesn't hurt. That's right.
She already knows history. So that's another reason why I think I felt comfortable.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well,
just got lucky.
Well, no, you didn't get lucky. You were graced. It's grace. It's not luck. That's what I believe, anyway. You know, that's how I express it, in other words. But, you know, it's each his own how they express it. But healing is a variety of different things. You heal in all kinds of ways. And, you know, we have many paths that people take, and they're not. None of them are wrong. That's what I want to stress, is there's no wrong way to get started. But the only wrong thing to do is to not start. And
right.
You know, don't worry about, you're not going to be alone, is what I'm saying, right, Cricket? If you come to Alaska, you will find dozens and hundreds of people who are willing to help you, and that's what we're all about.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you came on with, as I say, that years ago now, with the Guardian Angels, and I think you've moved on since then, if I understood Carol. But you've gotten more involved, isn't it, through with the missing people stuff that you do?
Oh, I never stopped with missing people. I never gave that up.
Right.
But, and, like, during COVID, I noticed as a lot of us advocates, I'm sure, have the death rate of children, women, abuse has escalated.
Yeah.
And no, we need more people to get them out there.
All right, so we're talking about the missing people aspect of what you do. So describe to us, first of all, let's take it simple, I'll take it slowly, because I want people to get, you know, kind of really educated about this. There are various types of missing people in the world, right? And tell us a little bit about the categories first, and then we'll break down some of the categories.
Well, children, of course. They have an Amber Alert, but that is only if they know that the child has been abducted.
Okay.
We wish they would put Amber Alerts on all children, regardless. But then you have a Silver Alert for elderly people.
Right.
Be on the lookout for runaways. Again, that's a term we don't like. We use missing and endangered.
Okay.
Because runaways are at a higher risk of something happening to them. One case I worked years ago was actually my first missing child case. The teenager hopped on a plane from Alaska, 15 years old, to go to New York. Now,
okay.
At 15, you can just fly by yourself. That's ridiculous,
really?
I think.
Wow.
She was found. It took like 2 months to find her. She did not want to go home. She was adamant with that. So she stayed with her father in Texas. And everything was good for a few months. And then one day she's gone again. She was being lured to New York by somebody.
Oh, wow.
And it took a bit, but yes, she was located again. And when I get at, like, because it's emotional, you know, when you're dealing with missing people and these kids and, you know, all that goes on. And sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this? And then I'll go look at the picture of that girl who now is married, has 2 children. Her husband's in the military. She's doing wonderful. That's why I do it.
Isn't that great? Yeah. You know, I used to do something called Los Angeles Community Policing, and it was all about an effort about the community and law enforcement working together to solve different things. And one of the issues, of course, was missing people. First of all, you have to admit it that they're missing, because there's a lot of people who, you know, they really don't show up, you know, for these reports. Others show up for reports and they expect instant results, and that's not how it works. In fact, people don't understand how many missing kids even there are. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands a day. And, you know, a lot of them are people that that decide to run away, a lot of them, or they're custodial instances, right, Tammy? And then there's,
yeah.
And then there are some that are, you know, stolen, or you'd call it, or abducted.
Yeah.
You know,
in fact, 80% of sex trafficked victims come from the foster care system.
Wow.
A lot of these missing foster children aren't even reported missing.
Wow. Jeez, that's terrible.
Yep.
All right. Well, is it more difficult to find a person that's, you know, from a foster house, or is it not really a difference? I don't know which is true.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Probably every case is different, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I had a local case, a friend of my son's, his brother, he ran away, and he was 12 at the time. And the cops were looking for him for 3 days and nothing. And then his mother contacted me, and me alongside a few of the other guardian angels and another search member, we smoked them out in 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Because we don't have that, just a runaway. That's the problem right there,
mm-hmm.
That attitude.
Okay. Right. Well, you have a more open, you know, mindedness about it. You know, we don't, one thing that people need to know is we don't blame the kid. You know, we don't blame the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Even when there's abuse going on, it's never the kid's fault. Although children like us, when we are abused, mm-hmm. and offended, we instantly feel responsible for what happened to us, and it's not true.
Yeah.
And so I want to emphasize that for anybody who's out there listening tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, that is so true.
Isn't it? Yeah. All right.
And CPS, they're a lot of the problem for a lot of these kids. I've had a case where the caseworker was lying to the parent, lying to the child. The child ran away, was being sex trafficked. And they knew she was out there, and they did nothing. And I would not stop calling and harassing them. Because they don't want to. Because they're responsible for these kids. They're the legal guardians. And they don't even want to take 5 minutes to check out a website to get somebody else involved in getting out there to find these kids.
Right, right.
And then our hands are tied.
Somebody else was just about to say something. I don't know who it was. Might have been your sister.
Oh, no, I just said every situation's different, yes. And
okay.
I'm thinking when she says about the attitude, I mean, there's a definite attitude, but they also don't have the manpower, you know, because it's like a kid runs away, no big deal. Well, it is a big deal because you don't really know that they did run away. Sometimes they're kidnapped, you know, like we were saying.
Right. Well, let me say it this way. We're not blaming everybody, but I can tell you that I have heard some horror cases. It really depends on where the child comes from. For example, a couple of years back now, Arizona, which is the next state over for me, the next door state, was horrible because they had caseworkers who were walking out in the back of the, you know, where the dumpsters were and throwing the files in there. And that's what they were doing to the kids. And they were caught, thank God. But, you know, it took a while. And in the meantime, there was no progress, obviously, in finding those kids. So, you know, it depends on, like so many things, the jurisdiction you're in, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And some are better than others. Some are a lot better than others. Some are horrible. And, you know, you don't know. Wherever you are, that's where you are. You know? So,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah. And you have no choice but to do what you have to do to get through that situation.
Yeah. And, you know, it's tough for children. It's tough for children who are young. It's tough for children who are adolescent. It's tough for children who are aging out. It's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
All of it. You know? But, God bless the ones that come back, and we have heard a lot of success stories too. And I don't want people to have the impression that they're all horrible. They're not, but many are.
No,
and
I always commend the good foster parents, judges, lawyers, parents. I speak out on what I speak out on because it's the bad ones we need to focus on to get children out of those places. You shouldn't be, you know, you take children from a bad situation in their biological home life, then you should put them in a better situation, not a worse situation.
Right.
But
now,
we talked about, and a lot of foster families are good actors too. They put on a good show. Yeah, they do.
Yes.
They put on a good show, and you don't know what you think you're taking that kid to a good, better environment, and it could be worse than what they left.
Right. Absolutely true. But there are lots of different ways that children can enter foster care. Some some parents give up their kids. They pick up the fight for their kids, and they actually turn them over. You know, then there's the ones that are reported by neighbors, and they're sometimes fought by the parents. But then, you know, after a while, and it usually takes more than one, let's say, visit by a caseworker. It takes many times, sometimes, establish the fact. Yeah, that the kids are in trouble and to do something about it. Right?
Yeah, we had an anonymous phone call was made, and that's how we got taken away. I, to this day, don't know who made that call, but an anonymous phone call was made that these parents are going to the bars, leaving their kids alone, coming home drunk, kids are alone all the time, blah, blah, blah. And all that process, they did not do anything really to get a fact. They didn't do the things they needed to do. So, again, you're thinking, they're the only parents you know, good or bad. You love them. That's your family. You don't understand. Why? You don't understand.
No,
why aren't they trying to get back, you know?
As a matter of fact, you don't even understand a lot of times what's going on with you is abusive.
No.
You know, because you have nothing to compare it to. And for you, it's normal life, right? It's just normal life. It's the way life is. So, you know, but you didn't know who it was that had made the phone call, but somebody did, right?
Yeah, I was able to look at the file, only my file. I couldn't look at the other kids or the parents, but it did say about the anonymous phone call and leaving the kids alone, and they were alcoholics. But instead of caseworkers coming there, they took two of the five of us, had another kid while we were in foster care. They took two of the five of us and put them in foster care. Now, those two siblings of Tammy's and mine have the worst problems. Well, actually, the one died. And I feel like that is a big contributor to their issues. Because, you know, why'd you take us away? What about the other kids? You know what I mean? You don't know what they're thinking.
No. Well, another way this can happen is... Go ahead.
And there's no one to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, because we didn't trust anybody. We didn't trust adults.
No.
We didn't trust other kids. We didn't make friends.
We trusted each other. That was it. So that's all we knew.
Right.
Well, I don't blame you. You know, this is a completely new surroundings and a new experience for you guys. And you don't know what's going to happen. It's all a mystery. But, you know, it's uncomfortable at the least. At the very least, it's uncomfortable. And sometimes it's terrifying for a kid, of course.
Tammy was with me. Tammy was with me the first time we got taken away, so I was very thankful for that. Our parents took the baby, who was Paul, and went to a hotel. I went to a friend's house, and that friend broke her collarbone, so then I went to the hotel, and then they made a phone call and called Children and Youth and just stuck Tammy and I in the car. Again, we don't know what's going on, where we're going, but, you know, it is a terrifying experience.
Yeah.
But she came with that foster home, which was great, but then we got separated again. Nobody told us anything, you know, like I'm bawling, where's my little sister, because I took care of her. Nobody would tell me anything.
Right. But 5 years older than Cricket, you felt a lot of responsibility, I'm sure. You know, it's like a mother feels for their kids.
I took care of all the kids. I used to steal food, like little cupcakes and stuff, to give to the kids like a treat. This was our treat, you know. I think the guy knew I stole the stuff till 5-6 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
I did.
And I used to, when our mother would send me to the store, and I couldn't read, but she'd give me a list. And I'd give the guy the list and the food stamps, and, oh, she forgot this. So put this up there, and, you know,
yeah.
that back then, you know, it's survival.
It's survival.
You had to eat something.
It's survival. Yep. And also, we need to say, Tammy went home a couple times, so she did spend more time with our parents and felt the same thing. Like, why are we getting taken away again? What's going on? And again, Tammy and the kids knew nothing. What's going on?
Right.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. You know. I understand. That's horrible.
Yeah. And the what? The kids' well-being is more important than reuniting them with family. Too many children are being killed because they want to send that baby back, send that child back, and then some time goes by and then that child is missing or that child is deceased. It's never ending.
Yeah. And you don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
No, you don't. I was going to say, I got to tell you that I am aware of the fact that, you know, I kind of dodged the bullet. There's another way kids can enter the system is when a parent gives up a child, usually it's a woman who's given birth and she can't support it. But, you know, they go into some system. They go into the system. I was extremely lucky because it took no time at all for me to be adopted. And I spent, you know, my whole life in an adopted family, and they were reasonably good. You know, they were not horrible. that saved my life, you know. But there's a lot of kids who didn't get that. And if you go through, you know, orphanage, and you come out the other side, and I used the expression before of aging out. You know, aging out means, by the way, for anyone listening, that you turn to a certain age, usually 18, and you're not supported anymore, or maybe you're supported halfway, but you begin to be abandoned until in your early 20s, you're given up and you're on your own. You know, it's you're aged out.
And
you end up with a plastic bag with a couple of shoes and a couple of shirts in it. That's it. Plastic bag.
Yeah. And a lot of these kids end up homeless.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
I wasn't taught life skills. And I know the reason I wasn't taught life skills is because they wanted to keep me prisoner. But if I hadn't had that friend to help me out for a year, I mean, I had to be rescued at 19, but I wouldn't have had nowhere to go.
No, of course not. You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say also for our history, Tammy didn't tell me what was going on until I was 26. I had Nicole, my oldest daughter. She came to visit me. And that's when she started pouring it all out. And I was just horrified. I mean, I always say I had a terrible, horrible childhood, but she had a horrific childhood. And she did not tell me. I mean, she knows I would have been there. I just think it was hard for her. Since that point on, I have been there the best I can.
It's hard for any kid, especially if it involves, you know, sexual assault, frankly. That is extremely embarrassing.
Yep.
And you feel damaged, even though it wasn't your fault. And, you know, maybe for some people it only happens once and that's all they need. It happened to me hundreds of times, but that's, you know, it doesn't matter. It can be one way or the other, and you still emerge from this, you know, unprepared for the rest of your life and damaged about, you know, what you have experienced. Like you're saying, you're unprepared for the world, for how to live a life, you know. So,
I still remember trying to tell the foster family what was going on with their two grown kids with me very briefly. And already was told I was making up a story. So that was it. I clammed up, and I never told anybody. Nobody believed
me. Yeah, and that's That's the number one thing. Who's going to believe you?
I was
silent my whole childhood. I wasn't going to say anything. I had that fear in me, instilled from such a young age. I'm not going to tell anyone. Who's going to believe me? They'll think I'm crazy. You know, as foster children, you already have that label. You're bad. You know, you steal. You know, all negativity. So nobody's going to believe us.
Right.
Well, and in my situation, it was their kids. They would not believe me over their kids. So that was a done deal. That was a dead issue. I let it go.
Well, I'm going to include Lori again. I know she's listened to all of this. And I want to specifically ask her, and I want you guys to know, you know, there are other kids who it's obvious have gone through all kinds of trauma. In some cases, physical trauma, which is a big part of Lori's story. It's obvious that what happened to her was dramatic and wrong. And, you know, her family was involved. In fact, you know, her brother was one of her abusers. Lori, just talk a little bit about, you know, how difficult it was to get the right kind of attention, because she was in horrible situations.
Actually never really was any attention. There wasn't. I'll give you just the quick rundown of the major things. My brother, who was a psychopath, sociopath, he killed animals, lit fires. I've seen him stab people. He was crazy, true crazy. He threw me out a second-story window when I was 4 years old. I landed on my back on a brick. I crushed the back of my head. I did break my back and other things. I was really damaged. When my mother finally came out the door, because she slept all day in her psychotic world, she picked me up, brought me in the house, threw me on the floor, and beat the crap out of me. I mean, with her fist, she had rage attacks. My father, the pedophile, I swear it had to be from birth to like age 16, because my mother slept in the bed. She was truly a psychotic person who talked to herself all the time. You know, it was always a conversation. You couldn't get her into your own world. So, and just the stories that how early I was like out of diapers led me to believe that it had to be something going on from birth with him. And like I said, my sister was, I don't even know the words to describe all what she had done to me, all the damage. She was the worst sister in the world, and people don't realize how much siblings can have an effect on you. She was abusive. Everything that she could do to get some kind of thrill from aggravating me, that's the kind of sister I had. She was only about her. Haven't seen her in 10 years. Don't want to ever see her again. She's done. So, yeah, that was my family. And the crazy brother also tried to kill me again one day, and he crushed the front of my throat as he was, like, lifting me up and down in one of his rage attacks. I got heavy, I guess, as I was passing out. So I fell, and I hit the edge of the fireplace, and it woke me up. And I took the opportunity, as he was still screaming, to run up the stairs and into the right room. That was where Gilda's room was, and that's where the guns were. My father's guns were in that room. So I heard him coming back up. In the meantime, I made a call to my neighbor. Within like 30 seconds, I mean, he was coming up. I knew he was going to get the guns to shoot me. That was a given. But she came in with her husband's gun. He was a cop, and she got my brother down away from me. But I was already, like, choking, so I've been doing that my whole life. I'm 65, and from all of that, I'm diagnosed with anoxic brain damage. That's from all the oxygen loss. And they told me I'm not going to recover. You know,
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's patently obvious what happened all through her life. She ended up in a body cast, metal kind of like
a
robot
cast. Neck brace, hand braces, back brace,
right.
Leg braces, ankle
right.
brace.
I lived my adult life.
Yeah. But my doctor, the one who made me promise to write the book, it was my rheumatologist, and he would call everybody over every time I showed up there because I would decorate my braces. And he says, this woman is in the worst shape possible for her age, but she's happy. And I would laugh at him, and they would write up papers on me. So officially,
yeah.
I'm like, according to them, in my hundreds. But, I'm still here. I did want to say I relate so much to the alcoholic parents. I'm married to a survivor of alcohol parents, and the stories of you going back and forth into foster care, that was him. That was him. Not the exact same stories, but his parents were in jail, out of jail, and he was here, he was there, he was all over the place. And he never
right.
did damage because he chose not to work on it, even though I tried to encourage him, affected him and still today. And at this point, there is nothing I can do for him, because there's not enough time left. But I can relate to that devastation of what's going on and that anxiety level. And probably your body hasn't started talking to you like something breaking down in there. And the second thing was I was a foster parent to my first little girl. They gave me her 2.5 years old. She was such a cutie. And her mother just gave her up. They got rid of her and put her in foster care. So
right.
I ended up meeting the mother because I would take her back and forth so she didn't lose that family bond. They had my phone numbers. I brought the grandmother over here. I wanted to, just do something. She came to me with, such dead eyes.
I know
everybody,
that.
Yeah,
know
you
that.
Know.
Yeah.
And it
I
took
to
a
see
lot
my
of
brother.
People, right?
Yep.
That when you were describing your brother, that's who I was seeing. But foster care ripped her out from us, which is what, again, I'm relating to. And, it didn't stop us. We kept in touch with her, all the way through the system. But it damaged her. It really left her with damage. No, the social skills were bad. Yeah, because she kept getting her development interrupted, the same as you were. And you can't develop normally if you're constantly interrupted with dysfunction. It just doesn't go together. So it's going to be hard.
I think it's ridiculous how they don't want foster parents to bond with the children.
Oh, that annoyed me.
Yes, and the child is in a good foster home with loving foster parents. Why do you have to take that child away and then put it in another home where it's going to be worse off and the child's confused, traumatized?
You would have wanted to stay with one person all the way through, right? If you had your choice.
I was going to say, if you had your choice.
That would have been a better thing to do because a child needs to form a bond, a firm foundation to function in this world. And they took that from you.
We have a brother that was in 15 different foster homes. And now he can't feel like anybody wants him. And he got adopted, I think, his junior year of high school. 10th grade or junior year of high school. Wonderful people, but like we were saying, it doesn't matter if they go to another nice place. They could go to another nice place and then another nice place. It's the disruption, first of all.
Exactly.
You have to acclimate to every situation, and it takes time.
That alone is traumatic to a child to keep being moved around.
So where you are now in your life after hearing where you've come from, I'm totally blown away by how much progress and how well you turned out. I mean, you two should be proud.
And
so
you
proud.
Alcoholic husband. I really did. I felt like nobody would want me. I can't go anywhere. Where am I going to go? I had to find my own self-worth that I don't deserve this.
That's a horrible feeling. Oh, is that a horrible feeling?
Now, somebody asked before that, you know, why is it that CPS acts the way it does? And the reason is, I think, you know, they are not set up to support the child. They're set up, well, a lot of them at least, are set up to get the child back to their original family, their abusive family.
Yeah.
So they don't let they don't let the kid integrate to a better family. Their job is, they see their job as to move the kid around until they can get him back with their family, and that's the wrong way to do it.
I can see that if the family is doing something to improve and get their child
back.
If you truly see that that's what the family wants and they're doing everything to in their power to get their child back, I agree 100% they should have their child back. But we, as Tammy and I, know too many stories of that not happening. And especially with our own parents.
Exactly.
They didn't do anything to get us back.
We should not have ever been sent back.
Yeah, I do understand that on the fact, but sometimes if they're not showing that they're going to be better people for their child, I'm sorry, they don't deserve their child.
No, of course not. One of the things that also was brought up early in the show here was that the term breaking the pattern. And usually it's not the original family that does that, which we're talking about now. We're saying if they want to improve, they may be able to get their kid back. But that's not the normal thing.
Right.
The normal thing is kid gets into recovery maybe, you know, 20 years later, 40 years later. And in the process of struggling themselves to be more healthy, to heal, they stop doing some of the same behaviors that they were brought up with, which is understandable when you are, you know, in an abusive home. You are not an abusive home, but an abusive home and a home that has really bad patterns of behavior. You'll accumulate those yourself. But if you work on yourself, you can break the pattern that's been going on literally for generations in your family, going back and back and back. And that's what we try to do. We have to accept where we came from, and then we have to start working on where we are. We can't fix the past, but we can correct and you know, where we are and make our life more healing way, so that when we're raising our families, we don't pass that behavior on. And that's what breaking the cycle is. As best we can, we stop the behavior in us that may have been going on for 3, 4, 5 generations, as far back as we know, in our own family. Now, that's really important for people to understand. That is possible, and it's up to us, but there is support for that. And again, NASCA does. Lots of people at NASCA have these similar experiences, and we refer to things that that in common we understand. In fact, here's the thing: our traumas are different, the different ways we are traumatized, but our reaction to it is the same. The abuse is different, but the trauma is the same. That's what I should say. The experience of trauma is a reaction to the abuses, and we can all have different kinds of abuses, but there's patterns in our trauma, like the fear, what we talked about, like the secrecy we talked about, you know, like the insecurity we talked about. Those are the things that we have to work on now if we want to improve our lives and therefore improve the lives of the people around us, and that's so important for people to understand. But we get it. Survivors get it. Because we've been there. We've been through it. And, you know, here you'll find people who are willing to, you know, share with you their story too, and perhaps some of the things that worked and didn't work for them. And, you know, nobody will force you to do anything, but there'll be an awful lot of recommendations coming your way. And it's up to you.
Well, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I also believe, too, the timing of our family compared to kids today. There is a lot more resources for these kids that they can go to somebody. We did not have that. You know, it was different time. You didn't talk about this or you didn't talk about that. You know, it was a totally different time where you have some more and some better resources to, you know, talk about what's going on. I mean, they still can be in the same situation we were. Don't talk about it. Can't tell. I mean, that still exists. It just seems like today in 2022, there seems to be more available. And
I can't tell you how much more.
Yeah.
How much more there is in my experience, because, you know, I'm older than you guys. and I'm also a male. And frankly, I was sexually abused outside my family, not by my family members, but, you know, outside my family. For about 6 years, I was abused that way, 5 years, whatever it was. It was a lot of abuse. And there was no support for boys who were being sexually abused. In fact, they didn't even believe it, that it could happen. You know, and,
I believe it.
And it took a long time, in my own recovery to finally find a way to start getting my feet under me, you know. And it was still a long way till I found, and this is fairly recent, which is what you're saying, ladies, that, you know, some of the improvements in the support that we have as survivors have been really created. You know, we now have universities who have in their psychology schools classes on, you know, on trauma. They're trained how to deal with trauma, which is pretty new. It's actually new since NASCA, which is, we're about 15 years old or something. I'd say it took about halfway through NASCA we started hearing about this, and thank God now it's caught on. And we're all, you know, benefiting from that, obviously, because, you know, anybody can hang out a shingle, you know, if you've got a counseling degree. But how do you know if they have, you know, trauma training or trauma understanding unless they have that as a specialty? They do, or at least some of them do. You need to ask them, but you'll find them nowadays.
That should probably be mandatory, I would think, at this time. You know, in 2022, I would think they should have those kinds of trainings for every counselor or, you know, psychologist. Because they didn't have that then, and they do have that now. So I think they all should be trained in that.
And more men are coming out. It's still hard for them. During my healing, when I was in dual diagnosis, it was group therapy, and I got to a point where they wanted me to run some groups, and I chose to do it on abuse. They didn't have a male therapist, so it was a group of 25 people, male and female, and it melted my heart so much when one of the men came up to me when we were on break. He had told his story that he was raped in prison, and that was the first time he ever mentioned it. And on break, I went out to tell him how proud I was of him. I know how hard that was for him, and to keep talking. But it made me... Like it just warmed my heart that he felt that comfortable to say that.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I'm not
That's
a
right.
therapist.
No, but it makes you feel good to help somebody else.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not a therapist either, but, you know, each year
we have our degrees
on,
in life.
More.
We have our PhDs of life experiences.
Yeah, well, that's true. It takes almost no time at all, frankly, you know, I get a lot of phone calls. It takes almost no time at all for me to turn the corner with somebody who's very upset, maybe even crying when they call, and have them laughing at the end of the call. And they're laughing because they're identifying with me and they're sharing some things back. And the burden gets lifted when you do that. And when the burden's lifted, you don't feel the weight, literally the weight of the world, at least for that moment. And you can, I believe in laughter, you know, so I make some jokes and stuff. They actually change that much in the span of 45 minutes or whatever the call was, you know. That's a miracle, frankly. But it's a gift that we all have if we're in recovery and we have our own, you know, experiences of abuse and then trauma and how we recover. We're in recovery, sort of, from trauma because, as was said before, you don't finish healing. You continue healing.
Right.
And you continue learning stuff, too. But if we have done that, we can attract the newcomer, to at least consider, like, for example, tonight we're doing this show here, and nobody has called in, but that doesn't mean people aren't listening. They are. And some of them, we're going to say, we're going to encourage them, it's okay that you didn't call in today, but maybe you'll call in next week. Sometime. Maybe you'll just listen to another show. And, you know, all of that is improvement, steps towards the right direction. And that's what we believe here. If we can help one person, you know, each show we do, we've done our job. You know, because we're actually saving lives.
That's true.
You know? So.
And like Tammy said, we have our life skills, survival skills, and all that. We can share with other people, and when they can relate to us or somebody else like us, it does make a big difference. It makes a big difference that like that guy that talked to Tammy. He obviously felt comfortable and never spoke of it before. I mean, that's huge. That's huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And that's why I call it our gift. You know, the fact is that we can attract a person into their own recovery without a lot of effort by simply listening to them and telling pieces of our own story and maybe recommending some things we've tried, but not forcing them. That's a miracle. They can turn their life around based on that. And that's our power. You know, it's our gift. That's how I see it.
Tammy, remember when I always said I was a superhero? I love all superhero movies, and I always say, well, that's because when I was a little girl, I thought I was a superhero. I always felt like I was a superhero.
No doubt, you are.
Not as an adult, but as a child, I always said that.
Yeah.
And Tammy saying that, like, supposed to say, well, Mom, that's because I used to pass her and feed her and I did everything. Our mother also was like a can of tonic half the time. Hung over, never got out of bed.
And I think I see Carol here at the bottom of the list. I wasn't paying attention, but I see 908, which is Carol's number. Let's see if it is.
Oh.
Carol, is that you?
Surprise, surprise.
you made it.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, honey. I had to take a new medicine for my arm, and it knocked me on my, you know what. I was asleep, for God's sake.
Oh, no.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm not taking that again. Bill, you should have called me a dingbat.
I texted you because
no,
I called
not good
in
enough.
When I realized the show
that's
wasn't
okay, honey. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
I was listening. I've been listening for the last 15 minutes.
Okay,
so
good.
I'm listening to, what you guys are saying.
And what would you like to offer us, Carol?
Well, I'll tell you what. You were talking about, I guess it was Tammy was talking about how years ago, and this is so true, you know, years ago, there was not the help that there is today, and people didn't talk about certain things years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Today is different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. Like 12 years ago, I say this every once in a while, 12 years ago when I wrote my book,
everything was so hush-hush. I mean, even 12 years ago. And my book, well, there were only two books on Amazon, mine and this other lady's. And today, it's flooded, okay? So there are people, you know, that are talking. We are getting our word out. We are doing things. This is great. And, you know, all this other stuff. But on the other hand, we have a long ways to go yet. We really do. But we are getting somewhere. You know, that's the truth. And, Tammy, I am so sorry. You can come over and smack me if you want. Oh, my God. You're the she's the last person I would ever let down. Ever, 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 ever. She's my little sister.
I actually thought your phone broke or something, but that's okay. I'm glad you're here.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, it's just one of those things. But anyway, you don't have to be a PhD either. See, I heard, you know, for the last half hour, I guess, almost, you don't have to be a PhD. I think, like all the presentations I've done so many, for God's sake, a lot of those people, of course, they had a lot more than I do. I have some education, absolutely, but they had a lot more. And they didn't know anything about child abuse and what it does to you. I've spoken to cops. We had a whole classroom of cops one night, and I was asked to come in and talk to them about child abuse. If you have a walk the walk, the talk,
don't
it's as simple as that.
Right.
You can't. Now, someone's trying to get through to me now. I'm not going to leave, though. I want to stay here for the next, 10 minutes. Hold on, I just want to look at the number. Hold on. My phone rings all the time. Hold on. Oh, my God. Okay, well, he'll just have to wait. So, but anyway, of course, I missed almost the whole show because, you know, I was sleeping. I can't believe I did that to my little Tammy. And I was looking so forward to it.
We've mentioned this before, either, Carol, but all these shows are recorded. This is just information for those
course,
that might be They are recorded, and if you miss a show or you hear a show and you want to go back and hear it again, they're all available. In fact, every show is available within maybe half an hour of its being finished. The audio goes through a process, and then it's ready. And it stays in our library forever. We have 3,500 shows that, you know.
Can you send me that through Messenger? Because I always have trouble finding them.
Yeah, the link is
the
under
link?
The name of the show. And
yeah,
the name of the show
when it comes out.
Yeah, right. Well, no, it's available. The link is available now. I'm not sure if it would play until about a half hour after the show is finished. But I just want people to know that there's lots of material here that every bit of it can be, you know, heard in the future, because we record these shows and we make them available to everybody. In fact, there was a study that was done recently about the top talk shows that had to do with child abuse, and guess what show was at the top of the list? Child Abuse Now. This show was considered the best show.
Wow.
You know, and I'm not shocked about that. We've been at this a long time, you know.
Yeah.
We really know, you know, how to do this. We've had many newcomers, but we've also had many professionals. We've had a mixture, you know, and it bodes well for the future of NASCA if we can find someone else who, you know, who would like to take it over someday. I'm ready to to do that, but, you know, they'll start with that library. And, you know, you'll be
in there for life.
This is my first experience, and I think, Bill, you're doing a fine job. I love hearing your stories. And I heard Carol once because Tammy sent me a link when she was on with Carol another time, and I did listen to that. Yeah, it is it's a wonderful platform, absolutely.
Yeah, Carol, that's my sister, Ange.
I figured as much, I had once seen a picture of you two together, and you have blonde hair, right?
It's white now.
Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't matter.
It was blonde.
You could have said platinum. That's what you could have said. There you go.
It is platinum. Our biological parents have snow white hair, and I inherited that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the thing now, anyway. People are letting their hair go back to gray. I'm not one of them, but that's what they do. I'm glad you're listening, you know, because this show, in fact, you're not just listening, you're on the you know, where we are, but this show has, it's reached so many different places. Like last night I did a show, and it was, I believe it was 3044. And you see, that's 3,044 shows that we've done just through Stop Child Abuse Now. That's a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I had told Bill that, and a couple others, because I felt really proud, you know, of NASCA. On Halloween, man, I had so many people. I had over 70 people, and their parents were with them. Everything was quite proper, and I was glad to see that. And the kids were very creative with their outfits, and I love to see that. Okay, but you haven't been to my house yet, but you should come when you're in the area, whatever. But the point is, it was nice and light on my porch, but I couldn't see down my driveway. I couldn't see faces way down at the end there. But this guy yelled up, "Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for all the, you know, trying to keep kids, you know, safe and trying to help in the community." And I said, "Well, that's not just me." I said, "That's we." That's what we do. You know, this is what we do. And so do the guardian angels. See, I always talk so much about the guardian angels because so often, you know, what do they do? Did you explain all that? They go out and they patrol the streets, how they stop kids from fighting, you know, and they have the diamond, the one at the back, you know, of the crew that they go out with. And they judge the situation before they go in and stop, you know, actually stop the fight. And they call the police.
Yeah.
We talked a little more about the missing children issue because
Tammy is not so involved with the guardians anymore. But she's very involved in her life and in the life around her.
Yeah.
And that's
I'm still thing. An angel, but they haven't had any events for a while.
No, they haven't. But on the other hand, I do follow them. And I wish Curtis had won for New York. I really do, because he would have been a very, very good mayor. Very good mayor. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've followed the Guardian Angels since 1979. No, I'm sorry. They came into view or into, you know, to be in 1979. I was in the 80s. I learned about them. So it's been a good long time. You know.
Yeah.
We're on the subway. I saw
that's the perv alert because this part is a perv.
Carol, we got to wrap this up. So I want to give Tammy the opportunity to finish the show with some thoughts of her own, and maybe her sister too. We're here with less than 3 minutes left. So Tammy, Cricket, let me give you that time, and your sister can join in, but. It's really only 3 minutes or less. So please take the floor and wrap this up however you'd like.
Okay, well, I want to say that my sister and I are both examples of no matter what you go through, you can't come out of it on the other side. Don't give up. Keep fighting and never stop challenging yourself because you'll get there. Amen.
That's right. Right?
Very good. That's right.
Amen, Angie?
That's right. Got to pull yourself up. I don't care about what happened in your past. You're talking about now. Only you can fix now.
Right. Now,
so
Angie,
true.
This is your first time joining us, and we want you to know we would love to have you come back and tell your own story someday, any day.
And
we have a lot of open slots on our calendar. And so all you got to do is pick one and
Tammy does it. I'll do it with Tammy. I'm not a shy person by any means, but I'd rather just do it when Tammy does it. She told me about it, so I said, "Okay, I'll join in."
Well, you've done a terrific job. You've done a really great job, and both of you as sisters are, you know, shining examples. You're supporting each other, which is really great.
Oh, we're blessed.
Really great.
Yeah, we're blessed.
Yeah, you are blessed. because you didn't come from that kind of family, but you ended up in that kind of family, at least the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank Lori as well. Lori Purcell is a trooper. She was with us the whole show and contributed quite a bit of stuff. And Lori, we really, really appreciate your activity with the NASCA family.
Well. Thank you so much.
I have 90 seconds left, so I gotta wrap it up. And Carol, I appreciate your calling in at the end, so we heard your voice. And I want other people to know we do these shows 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, and it's at 8 o'clock Eastern, so 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific for 90 minutes. Some of the times we have special guest shows like tonight, which are terrific. Some of the times we have what we call question and answer discussion shows, where we have a professional who's also a survivor helping us lead the show. So make any show you want, and we'd love to see you. In the meantime, this is Bill Murray saying have a great weekend. Don't forget to turn the clock back on Sunday morning. and we'll see you on the other side at the radio. See you on the radio. God bless and keep you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Good night. Oh, my goodness.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.